Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 105. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And today we're talking about Foxnare by Yoon-Ha Lee, the final book in the Thousand Worlds series, which makes me a little sad. And also, I don't really believe them whenever they're like, there's going to be no more, or this is a standalone, because, like, Dragon Pearl was supposed to be a standalone, and then we got Tiger Honor, and they said that about so many other things, so.
Yeah, I feel like this is not a done deal forever and ever. Yeah. Like, it's the last one envisioned for now.
Yeah.
And if somewhere down the road there comes an idea, I would not be shocked.
Right. I will talk about it, but I have some ideas for how Yoon-Ha Lee could expand on his world.
Mm-hmm.
The other random thing that I wanted to mention was, I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, I was like, there's a specific name for when you're, like, the child of a demigod, and how, like, your powers are different, or whether or not you have powers. Remember when we had that conversation?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Legacies. They're called legacies. And I couldn't remember that for some reason, and I wrote a note, like, the day after we recorded that podcast, and I kept forgetting to bring it up. And apparently, you don't have any powers when you're
okay.
A legacy. So, just keeping that in mind for all of our random spinoff ideas for how Rick could keep writing about Percy Jackson, and specifically Percy and Annabeth's child. But we'll see. Maybe it'll be different. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the gods can gift anyone with
That's
stuff.
True.
So, like, if Athena sees Annabeth's child and is like,
I bless you.
Here's, have some special ability.
Yeah.
Like, that is totally a thing that they can do. So,
yeah.
I'm just saying.
If you would like to contact us to talk about Foxnare, to talk about demigods and their children, or anything else, really, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. There's been a lot of news this past week, none of which we can currently talk about. So we will obviously be focusing on all the book-related news. And there actually is a good amount of things to kind of just mention that I feel like is good to know. First and foremost, Khadija Khatib, who did the Daughter of the Deep cover, who did the Chalice of the Gods UK cover, and the new UK covers for Percy Jackson and the Olympians, posted her, like, paintings that she did of the covers, so it doesn't have any of the text on it. I immediately snagged the Lightning Thief cover to make my phone home screen, which I have not changed since Black Panther came out.
Oh,
when was that? Like 2018 or something like that?
Yeah.
It's been M'Baku from Black Panther for literally years. And I decided, finally, to change it, and I had to change it to the Lightning Thief cover, because the colors are just so beautiful. It makes me happy every time I pick up my phone. But I wanted to let people know, in case they didn't see that, because it's really nice seeing the paintings without all the text on it, and you could use it for backgrounds like that. It's always super fun.
Yeah.
There's also been a starred review, I believe the first starred review, from Publishers Weekly for A Drop of Venom by Sajani Patel, which comes out on January 16th. That is, as far as I know, the next Rick Riordan Presents book, and that's not coming out until next year. So we'll have a little bit of a break before we, you know, get back into the huge slate of 2024 books
yeah.
that's coming out. But that is the next one, and that is one that I am very, I think we're both very much looking forward to.
It looks very cool, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't talked to Danielle yet about getting her on the podcast to discuss it, but I'm going to find a way to do it. I don't think it'll take much convincing, to be honest. Reed Riordan also shared a chapter from Foxnare, as well as a spotlight article on Captain Chaewon. So go check that out if you haven't already seen it. And if you haven't gotten into Foxnare yet, what are you waiting for? It's actually only been out for, like, a week at this point, so
yeah.
we won't hold it against you too much. Reed Riordan also put out another article in which they want you to meet Eredira from Dawn of the Jaguar. Again, I did not read this article at all because I have not read Dawn of the Jaguar at all. And I do want to confirm that is the final book, so that the Shadow Bruja series is a duology. Dawn of the Jaguar is done. So Jen has written 5 books for Rick Riordan Presents. We'll see if she ends up writing any more. But for now,
and as far as we know, she's not going to pull a Yunha. And this is a standalone.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. It has 2 sequels.
Yeah.
As far as we know, this is the last book.
Yeah. I was writing my book review for Foxnare, and it made me a little sad because I realized the first 3 books out of Rick Riordan Presents, the ones that they pretty much announced, like, at the start, the inaugural class, as I'm calling it, was Arusha, The Stormrunner, and Dragon Pearl. And so we got 5 books out of Arusha. That's done. That finished in 2022. And then Rosh put out The Spirit Glass, which was, you know, supposedly a standalone. So that's done. And then the Stormrunner series wrapped up in 2021. And Dawn of the Jaguar concludes the duology spinoff. That just came out this month. And now we got Foxnare, which is the last in that trilogy from Yunha Lee. And so I'm just like, the initial books that came out of Rick Riordan Presents back in 2018, 2019, they're all done now.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me a little sad.
Yeah. For sure.
Becky also tweeted this week about the differences between the Chalice of the Gods editions, which I was not aware that there were this many, like, different special editions. So she tweeted that this is the U.S. Chalice of the Gods editions without signatures. Barnes & Noble includes recommendation letters from the gods, and then the Barnes & Noble gift with purchase laptop sticker of the new Camp Half-Blood logo.
Did not get one. I ordered mine and had it delivered to my house, so they didn't put the sticker in the book.
Yeah.
My guess is you had to buy it in the store, which had they told me that, I would have just gone and bought it in the store.
Yeah, I know. I also didn't get one, and I just ordered it online.
Yeah, my thought was, like, the letters from the gods feels like it came from the publisher. Like, it's included in the book, but it's stuck to the back cover, because you've seen my copy.
I have a copy, too.
And so, like, I feel like that was from the publisher. This was this special thing from Barnes & Noble. That was the only difference I saw.
Books a Million will get you a bookmark, and Target will get you a bumper sticker, and Walmart is a high school newspaper article. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I'm a collector of special editions. I really have no interest in trying to get all of these because they're not that different. Like, it is cool, you know, the high school newspaper article, I would love to see what that looks like, and you know, I don't really need a bookmark these days because I read a lot on my Kindle, but
yeah,
I would have liked the sticker because I love stickers.
Right, same.
Yeah, so if you got any of those other editions, let us know. Send some pictures. Would really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if there are spoilers in the newspaper article or something, if you can send it to Karen and not me, that would be fantastic. Or mark it like, Kristen, do not look, or something, so that I don't see it because I'm trying to avoid them.
You can email that to us.
Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of special editions, Illumicrate has a new set of covers for Percy Jackson and the Olympians. This is the UK version. This is in conjunction with Rick and Penguin UK books. And they're exclusive editions from Illumicrate, and they're just absolutely stunning. Brand new covers. They have,
The first picture is the mock-up of the dust jackets.
Right.
And then underneath, you get the circular-looking
style. Yeah, which looks amazing. I really like that.
Yeah.
And then they also have the sprayed edges, which combine to form Camp Half-Blood, which is really cool. And so if you want this edition, you have to sign up for Illumicrate subscription box. It's very possible that they will also sell it in their shop afterwards, but if you want, like, Because they'll also send you, like, merch with it and stuff. They usually, that's how their subscription boxes work. So you can get additional things if you sign up for the box.
I was going to say, further down in the, like, thread, they have the dates for the sale. Like, I know that a lot of these special editions sell out to the active subscribers. So if you are an IllumiCreate subscriber, congratulations. You will have first dibs at these.
Yeah.
And will probably have a good chance at getting it. Those of us that are not, aka me, I've been on a waiting list for a minute, but I am not a member yet. You'll have to wait till the general sale. But worth noting, IllumiCreate is a UK company, and they have a US and a UK website, but they're only doing one sale, and they're shipping internationally.
Yeah.
So you can't order it from the US IllumiCreate site and have it shipped from US to US. It's going to come from the UK. So you have to pay international shipping. It's just one of those things. So good to note. But yeah, all the dates are on their tweet, like the thread there. So you can see when that all is coming up in December. I am kind of hoping that they have enough of these, like they thought ahead and ordered enough that it will actually hit general sale.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling I'm not going to get to subscription before December.
I signed up for the subscription box also because November's box is Starling House by Alex E. Harrow, which is absolutely just an incredible book. And I really liked the cover for it and everything. And I was like, oh, I would totally get that. And then I'd be on the list for December's, but I also have a feeling that I'm not going to make it. I didn't make it with Rainbow Crate. You know, I ended up buying the one afterwards, but couldn't get into that, and I feel like this one's going to be even tougher. But yeah, the pre-sale for active IllumiCreate subscribers starts on the 12th of December. The general sale begins on the 14th of December at 3 p.m. GMT. And the set is priced at £125 plus shipping and any other, like, fees that might be applicable if it's being sent internationally. I think that these are absolutely stunning, and I really, really, really want a set. I would love to be able to get the box, but I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm torn. I really like these. I especially love the actual, like, hardcover.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the dust jackets are pretty, but they're not quite as much. I don't love the dust jackets quite as much as I love the actual, like, naked hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pretty.
It is.
Like, with the painted edges, the sprayed edges, the way they look, they're just so pretty. So, yeah, I am hoping maybe I can convince myself that spending $125 in December is a good plan, especially since I'm going to Disney, like, in a couple weeks after this goes down. So I'm like, probably shouldn't spend that money, but I may do it anyway if I get the opportunity.
So. Yeah, it's so beautiful. So sign up, see what happens. I looked at some of their older boxes and stuff, too, in the shop where they still have things on sale. And there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. So check it out. I'll put a link to it, to this whole thread on Twitter, in the show notes. But now it's time to get to Kristen's Corner for this episode.
Okay, so Survivor. Yeah, we should talk about Jemima.
We really should.
She was featured more in this last episode. I think we got our first, what do they call them? Diary session kind of thing?
Confessional?
Yeah, confessionals, I guess. Yeah, that's basically what it is. We got our first confessional from her, because I don't think we've had her have one yet.
I think there was one very short one, but it was nothing like what was in this episode.
Yeah. Like, she actually got some decent screen time, which was very exciting. This past episode sorted them into their new tribes, so now there's 3 tribes of 5, and she ended up going back to Reba Camp with 4 Reba and 1 Lulu. Mm-hmm. And we all, if you watched the episode, you saw that the Lulu person basically self-evicted. They snuffed their own torch.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Sean basically was just like, I can't deal with this.
Other
priorities and I want to leave. I didn't read the article, but I did see a headline that said that he regrets it and that he should never have... I'm like, come on, like, you're on Survivor, like, I understand priorities get, you know, when you're out there in all that stress, your priorities feel like they're mixed up and like you should be home. Why am I spending my time here being miserable when I can go home?
But like you knew what you were signing up for.
And it's an adventure and it's a month-long adventure and then that's it. Like you are only guaranteed that one time to play. Yes, there have been times where other people have gotten to play again and again, but like this is the only one you guaranteed once you're cast. Like you may never get another chance. So and if you quit, you never get another chance. Jeff Probst hates quitters.
Yeah, I knew that, but I didn't realize that he wouldn't let you come back on.
There's only one person that I can remember. There may be others. There's one castaway that I can remember who was brought back on another season because he went out with an injury. When they brought him back, we found out that his injury was basically faked. Like, he faked, like, kidney pain or something. Like, he faked, like, abdominal pain, and they pulled him from the game. And then we found out later that it wasn't necessarily a thing. Like, he may have had a slight pain, but, like, there wasn't anything physically wrong with him once they got him off the island. And they, Jeff Probst does not like quitters.
Yeah.
It bugs him more than anything. So, yeah, I don't think there's any chance that if you walk away from an opportunity like this, you're not coming back.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the thing with Sean. And so we did get to see a lot more of Jemiah in this episode. We got to see her working with Dee, and I can never remember the older lady's name. Julie, thank you. I was going to say Kathy. I was like, no, that's wrong. Yeah, we got to see her working mostly with Dee and Julie. Sifu is kind of on the outs with them a little bit. They were holding Reba strong, quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes right now. Because that's usually what you do in this sort of situation when you have an outsider, an obvious outsider. You do that. But Jay pushed the whole episode to get rid of Sifu. And I was really worried that she pushed too hard, too fast, and that Dee and Julie were going to kind of see this as, like, we can't trust her. But I think it was more or less Jay really just didn't trust Sifu because of some of the things he had been doing around camp and the way he acted and the way he was always out searching for idols and, like, didn't really hide it. And he's a little bit sporadic.
Yeah.
Just in general.
But also, he is a threat.
Yeah.
And she wanted to get him out early.
I do also agree with Julie that he's the strongest member of their tribe, and getting rid of him is going to hurt them badly in physical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of glad he's still there because he's going to want to win to stay. And hopefully Reba can pull out a win and send somebody from the new Bello or the new Lulu home. But I am a little nervous because their tribe is the, like, physically the weakest of the three now. So we will see how that rolls forward in the future. But I am hopeful because I think there's only, usually, if they do a switch like this, there's usually only, like, two or three more tribal councils before we get to the merge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't done the math numbers-wise with what they started with, but it's usually somewhere around 5, 6, 7 tribal councils, and then they get to the merge and play it out from their single, you know, each person for themselves. And I really think that Jay stands a good chance of doing really well in the second stage of the game. She just needs to get through the rest of these team weeks. Because Dee and Julie have a very close bond, like, they are a pair. And Jay doesn't really like Sifu very much. So I'm just a little nervous about if they end up back at Tribal Council, how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
It seems like Jay ranks higher than Sifu with the other two. And now that it's all Reba, they don't have an option but to vote out one of their own. So, like, it would be obvious. But, yeah. We'll see. We'll see what lies ahead. I don't remember anything crazy going on in the next week on. So we'll just have to watch next week's episode and see if there are any complications. But looks pretty good for her. We just have to cross our fingers that things work the right way.
Yeah, because either Sifu could be mad that she suggested, if he finds out, that she suggested they send him home, or Dee could be mad that Jay didn't write down Sifu at the tribal council. And so she's potentially got a target on her back now, but I'm really hoping that if they don't go home, like if they don't go back to tribal council for a week or two, that maybe something else can kind of sort itself out.
I'm kind of hoping that some of the personalities on the new Lulu and new Bello will clash a little and they'll throw a challenge to actually go to Tribal Council to get rid of somebody. Because there's a lot of big personalities, like with Bruce and with some of the other ones. There's a lot of people on those two tribes that are going to, like, butt heads dramatically. So we'll see if that is the case. It's happened before. Who knows if it'll happen again. But Survivor, it's going pretty well. Jay's gotten me a lot of points in my Survivor Fantasy League. Yeah. So I'm taking that. I think she's up to, like, 15 or 18 points for the year. Wow. And I'm like, it's pretty awesome. Again, not gonna lie. Okay, and then our next part of Kristen's Corner is always an update on the SAG-AFTRA strike. And we don't have any, like, really great news. SAG-AFTRA did put out a thread just kind of summarizing that they've reached the 100th day of the strike. They've been asked to return to the table. Negotiations are due to resume on Tuesday the 24th, which is probably when you all will be, well, this episode will be posted. So by the time, maybe we'll have some good news by the time we record next. But yeah, so they are due to go back to the table. Basically, this is just reminding them that, like, strength and solidarity is most important. We need to be out on the picket lines. We need to be proving to the studios that we are one unit and that we are, you know, dedicated to our cause. They also warn that in the coming days, there's likely to be noise surrounding the talks and that there's going to be rumors and innuendo and things flying around that from both the studio and from other things, like other people, the media, whatever. And basically just to stay focused and to keep trudging forward. And yeah, so I'm glad that talks are at least ongoing, that, like, they have a date to get back to the table. Both sides have had some time away to think about priorities and all of that. So hopefully we're getting closer and closer to a resolution.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up too much, but I was pretty happy to see that they decided to go back to the negotiating table after walking away not that long ago. I really thought that AMPTP would kind of hold out a little bit longer, but I think that they're realizing, as they did with the WGA, that their tactics of kind of making the strikers sound like they're the ones who are asking for too much, like, none of that's working for them. Yeah. And so I think they know that they have to figure this out sooner rather than later.
I sort of think that the tactic by the studios to cut off negotiations and say, we can't, you know, we're at an impasse, whatever, I think it was more of a, we have time to kill, it doesn't matter, so let's make them, like, reevaluate one more time kind of thing, because the writers struck for 150 days. They're back at work, but they've got probably 2 months worth of work before you can even begin getting actors in. Mm-hmm. So they basically have 2 months that they can't use the actors anyway. So why not keep the strike? You know what I mean? Like, the studios are like, why deal with them now? We can put it off for another month, tell them we're not negotiating anymore, cut off talks, and then they have to, you know, tell them they have to figure out their side. Now, I do like that SAG is standing strong. They know what they need. They know what the bare bones minimum deal is going to be, and I don't think they're going to budge from that, but this is just games by the studio. I think they had spare time left because the writers aren't done, and they said, we might as well try. I don't think it's going to get them anywhere.
Yeah,
and I'm hoping that this return to the table is, like, the real deal. Like, we are actually negotiating. We're ready for a deal. Like, let's do it. Because, you know, even if the actors are done striking, like, even if they come to a resolution, they won't start working until the writers are done and they're ready. Like, it's not like they have to pay them more if they get done now versus if they get done in December and they start work in December. Yeah. It's the same basic thing. So
yeah,
it's complicated.
It is. It's complicated. And I really hope that SAG gets what they need out of this deal. And I am just, especially after Comic-Con, I just really need to be able to talk about Percy Jackson. I'm just so ready. So hopefully within the next week or so, maybe a week or two, we'll finally get an end to this strike. And then it's going to be all Percy Jackson television forever.
Yeah, Forever and always. Yeah.
Our discussion for this week is Fox Snare by Yoon-Ha Lee. And I will hopefully have my review up on Subjectify Media by the time that you listen to this. I've been struggling with it a little. Look, life has just been beating us down. Everything that's going on, both in the world at large and personal lives, I feel so exhausted.
It's very hard. There's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that after this next week or two, things will hopefully get better in some areas. In others, I don't know what's going to happen, but...
Right.
You know, at least we have these books to keep us going strong. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pretty excited to talk about Fox Snare because, like we were talking about earlier, we really like Dragon Pearl and Tiger Honor quite a lot. And I feel like Dragon Pearl is one of the OG Rick Riordan Presents books, so it's really cool to be talking about a third one in this series and the conclusion to this series. So as always, we're going to do our non-spoiler section first. And if you know nothing about Fox Snare, it's basically Mean, Sabine, and Hanul team up to cement peace between the Thousand Worlds and the Sun Clans. That is essentially what this book is about, even though a lot more goes on. But that's a pretty good basis, I think.
Agreed, yeah.
And so I wanted to get your opinion. What did you think of this book? How did it compare to the first two for you?
This one was definitely, like, the plot in general is a little simpler. There's not really a lot of convolution. There's not a lot of twists and turns for, you know, it's pretty straightforward. But honestly, it was a very quick read for me. It didn't really drag in many places at all. It was an easy read, and I really did like it, especially, I'm personally kind of a fan of the way it ended because it feels resolved, but it also does leave, like, room for more if at some point Yoon-Ha Lee does want to write more books in the series. But, like, it's a perfect place to cap it off, too, if there's not anything else that needs to be written. So I was a pretty big fan. Like, I like the book. It's a solid book.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really liked the dual POVs between Mean and Sabine. Because it kind of felt like it was the best of both worlds with Dragon Pearl and Tiger Honor. And this book really leans on everything that happened before this in both of those books. And the dynamics between the three main characters with Hanul as well, that really informs a lot of what happens in this book. And I thought that was really interesting. And I thought that Yoon did a really good job of reminding us everything that happened in those other books without, like, going into way too much detail. That is a difficult line to walk sometimes, but I think he did a really good job there.
Agreed. I felt like there was just enough to remind me of what happened so that I didn't have to go back and read both other books, but I am glad that I read them and have them to reference for this. Mm-hmm. Like, this as a standalone would be kind of difficult. It's definitely meant to be read after the other two, but he does give just enough of a refresher to keep you like, oh yeah, that's right, that's what was going on, okay. Mm-hmm. So I did like that.
I think you could read this as a standalone, but it's so much more satisfying knowing how far, especially, like, Mean has come since that first book.
Agreed.
And there are a lot of themes shared between all three books. We still have a lot of talk of this, like, racism and prejudice with fox spirits, and even some related to Sabine's family and the tiger spirits and all of that. Trust and honor play a really big role, especially for Sabine, and actually even Mean, too. And truth and perception, especially, I found to be really interesting because we have this war that's been going on between the Thousand Worlds and the Sun Clans, and you're kind of like, okay, who's the good guys? Who's the bad guys? How much of this history are we actually aware of? What is the truth, and how can you perceive these things differently? And then social inequity is also a big thing. Mean talks a lot about her home planet and where she came from and how it never got terraformed and the poverty that they lived in, and then how she still, you know, sees these other people who are just used to all of this stuff around them, all this material possessions and food, and it still kind of blows her mind every once in a while. And I really like that aspect of Mean's backstory quite a lot. But let's talk about the characters now, because like I was saying, Mean is, she's come a long way since Dragon Pearl. She's officially the bearer of the Dragon Pearl now. And not everyone knows that she's a fox spirit, but there's definitely quite a few people, especially in the higher ranks, who know what she is. But there's really nothing they can do about it anyway, because the Pearl chose her. And that's kind of a point of contention that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I really felt like in this book, we see her maturity a lot. Like, she has really come a long way since Dragon Pearl. And she chooses very actively to not use charm, to not try to trick people. She kind of gives them the chance to make their own decisions. And the Mean back in Dragon Pearl, you know, she did not do that a whole lot. So it was really nice to see her grow up quite a bit.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see how Mean uses charm in this book. And mainly, it's not using it.
Right.
Like, she didn't really hesitate to use it before. And I kind of lean that on growing up in a family where using it was, like, a frowned upon. Like, they didn't want them to have any possibility of really, like, exposing the family. And they were all in hiding. So it makes sense that, like, once she's escaped the home, her home dome, once she escapes there and, like, gets to being a cadet and is, like, on the ship and all of that, like, it makes sense that she is kind of using it a little wildly because, again, she's been told not to use it. She's been hiding for so long that, like, she has a mission and she's on this mission and she feels, you know, kind of, like, it's a righteous use of it because she's trying to save her brother and blah, blah, blah. So I really did like that in this book, it's kind of the opposite. She's seen all that she did. She's seen how it's been used against people. And she regrets making those choices now that she's matured a little and seen, you know, how people react to charm and what it can do and how it hurts friendships and all that. So yeah, I was really, really excited to see Mean kind of mature a little and understand what using her abilities really does to other people. And she's very mindful of that throughout the book.
Yeah, and I love seeing that side of her. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes from herself, but some of it also kind of comes from June, her brother. He's still around. He's still a ghost, you know, fortunately, unfortunately. And he does kind of work as her conscience, I think. I think he's been that way throughout the books for, you know, since we kind of met him and knew that he was a ghost. And he continues to do it in this one and kind of keeps her in line in a lot of ways. Because he's got this, like, older brother mentality. He's seen a little bit more of the world and the universe. So he kind of tells her to rein it in sometimes and all of that. And a lot of his purpose in this book is not only that, but basically to keep his bad luck at bay, because ghosts bring bad luck. It's not something that they can help. It is what it is. And so a lot of times he really fights to, like, stay in the background and not cause any disruptions. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I was like, the more that June can help, the more he does, because it's like, I know I caused so much bad luck for you, so if there's things I can do that will actually help, he is very much on board for that. And it was very nice to see him and his role and his relationship with Min progress throughout this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the last bit of Min's section is that she also now has a bodyguard named Silhouette, who, because she's the bearer of the Dragon Pearl, needs to kind of, you know, Min needs to be protected. The Pearl needs to be protected more than anything.
Yeah.
And I have some thoughts on Silhouette that I will have to save for our spoiler section.
Agreed. Yeah, a lot of what happens with Silhouette is something that we'll talk more about there. But I kind of love that Silhouette is introduced at the beginning of this book, basically so that Min has someone to ditch all the
time. Yeah, pretty
much. I feel like the first half of this book, at least, is Min trying to get around ships and things, and every time she's... You know, she'll keep an eye on Silhouette, like, know where Silhouette is, and then she'll try and ditch her, like, you know, to go do something or to go do this. And it just cracks me up that, like, Silhouette as a character is basically there to add some tension. Like, Min is constantly trying to, like, do something, and she's just not sure how Silhouette's going to respond, so she might as well just, like, try and ditch her and get it done, and then she'll come back and apologize. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
That is funny, and now that you mention it, I'm pretty sure that she spends most of her time away from Silhouette than actually with her.
Pretty much.
Which is funny.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Next up is Sabine, and they are settling into their life as a cadet. They are a tiger spirit, and they were the star of Tiger Honor. Basically, at this point, because of everything that happened in Tiger Honor, they're trying to prove that they're different from their family and that they can be trusted. So, like, tiger spirits, definitely there isn't as much prejudice against them as fox spirits, but because of what their uncle did and because of everything going on with their family, Sabine is sort of, like, trying to go above and beyond. Already going above and beyond, because that's kind of their thing, is, like, you know, the honorable thing to do. They're always very strict about that. And so a lot of their part in this story is to prove that they're not like their family, and basically to just be along for the ride, and because they are a very good cadet and they're a little bit older now. My whole thing with this was that I just wanted to know more about their family and the fallout. Because at the end of the last book, their family kind of left their home area and were on the run, kind of, because they were involved in all this stuff. And then I really thought that this book would bring in more of what was going on with them. And they, other than giving background information, we didn't really find out anything about what they're up to currently.
Yeah, that did kind of disappoint a little bit. I was kind of hoping to at least, you know, get some backstory, like, you know, or just slight stuff, like, Sabine is passing messages, they let them know where they are, but, like, it's, like, top secret kind of stuff, you know, I kind of expected something like that, so it was a little disappointing there, but
yeah.
I get it.
And you only have so much room,
right,
to be able to put that kind of stuff in a story like this, and that, so I do understand why it wasn't in this book, but as we will talk about soon, it's one of the things where I feel like there's room for other books set in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have Hanul, who is the dragon spirit who controls water and weather, and whenever she gets out of sorts, she basically starts raining, which I thought was really funny. And Hanul has been in the other books as well. She's currently an apprentice to Dragon Counselor Guan. And the Dragon Council is the group of dragon spirits that terraform planets with their powers. And so they're kind of at odds with Mien and the Pearl, because the Pearl can basically do what they do, but, like, faster and better. And they're kind of mad about that, but Hanul is begrudgingly an apprentice to Counselor Guan.
The tension in this book between Mien and the Dragon Council and how that affects Hanul and Mien's friendship and, like, all of that is very interesting. I think it's one of the more, especially early on in the book, it's one of the more interesting through lines. Like,
yeah,
as you're trying to kind of see how it's set up and the politics of both sides of this and why Mien isn't the biggest fan of the Dragon Council and why the Dragon Council, it doesn't trust Mien, like, at all, and how the Dragon Pearl is complicating their life, and, yeah, it's all really just very interesting. So, I'm glad that this was a part of this book, because I feel like you probably could have cut some of the Dragon Council storyline out, but I'm really glad it's there, because I really think it keeps things dynamic, and it keeps Mien, like, and Hanul especially, it keeps it from being too simple of a relationship.
Yeah.
It just makes it a complex thing that they have to tackle and are sometimes at odds with and sometimes are on the same page with. It's just a matter of how they're looking at it and if they're seeing the other person's perspective and all of that. So,
yeah, I completely agree with that. I think the dynamic between the three of these characters was very interesting and probably one of my favorite parts of the book, because they're all peers, they're all about the same age, they're all kind of friends, but kind of not, because they have a lot of history of distrust between them, too, because if you remember, Mien pretended to be Hanul's best friend who died, so, like, that's gonna grate a little bit.
Yeah.
Sabine and Mien worked together during the hijacking crisis. They were kind of at odds, and there was, again, that prejudice against fox spirits, but then in the end Mean kind of proved that she was on the right side of this. And then you also have, like we were saying, the Dragon Council being at odds with Mean over the Dragon Pearl, and how that they elected not to terraform Mean's homeworld. And so that kind of sits poorly with her, because she remembers how much she struggled, and like I was talking about, she sees the opulence around her, and she just can't imagine having grown up in a world like that. And I thought that in particular, there's a lot of like subtle political intrigue in this book, and I feel like that's just a really interesting perspective, because it's not just the Thousand Worlds versus the Sun Clans, it's also within the Thousand Worlds how people don't see eye to eye and how they're different and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting seeing the dynamic of the kind of Mean versus the Dragon Council, not just because of the stuff I have already mentioned, but like thinking about how the Dragon Council could have absolutely changed Mean's family's life. Like, the entirety of her planet, their lives could have been drastically different. But then in the same breath, or like the next breath, I guess, Hanul points out that like every planet is somebody's home planet. Yeah. And we don't have enough manpower or dragon power to take care of everyone. Like, we can't terraform every planet at once. It requires energy, it requires skill and talent, and you have to have the dragons to actually do the work. And so, like, it was a really well-handled issue, and hearing these two at odds about it really just makes, again, it makes the story stronger, it makes their relationship more interesting, and I really liked kind of seeing both sides of it, because it's obvious that you can kind of, like, jump on Mean's side, because A, main character, but B, like, that is a very valid reason to not trust the Dragon Council. Like, I 100% get it. But at the same time, well, the Dragon Council probably does a little wheeling and dealing, and they probably could be a little better at choosing their targets. Like, you can also see Hanul kind of being like, well, wait a minute, this is my people you're talking about, and we have a reason for the things we do. And I really, really enjoyed reading all that.
Yeah. It added a really good dynamic to the story.
Mm-hmm.
The last two characters I want to talk about before we get to our spoiler section include Captain Chaewon, who is the captain of the Heitei, which back when we read this earlier, I did not like put two and two together, because I don't think we knew what the Heitei was, but like since reading Gracie Kim's books, we actually have a description of the mythical creature that is the Heitei, and so I thought it was really cool that like, oh yeah, the ship is named that. I forgot.
Yeah.
She basically gives Sabine the job of conveying a diplomatic mission from Station Sangyong to the border territory where the Thousand Worlds and the Sun Clans will have peace talks. I thought this was funny just because Sabine is like 15 and like going along on this diplomatic mission, and like all of these kids, I mean, that's how these books always are, but I think there's something specific about them being in space and them being part of such like a political, almost militaristic environment that really kind of shocks me when I remember how young they all are.
Yeah. I also loved with that kind of storyline, we got some complication with Sabine kind of seeing the forest for the trees. Like, when they're sent on this diplomatic mission, it's for a couple of reasons. One, you know, it'll kind of give Sabine a chance to redeem their family's name if things go well. But if things don't go well, the Thousand Worlds can just kind of blame that family and not all tiger spirits. So, like, I kind of, again, I love the complexity of that. And it's not necessarily something that Yunha had to include in this story. You could have told Sabine's story without really getting to that. But I liked that it really gave it a complication and made it a really rich idea that, like, Sabine has something to prove here, too. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that I'm not my uncle, but it's my family has more to offer than just the things my uncle did. Like, it's not just Sabine proving themselves, it's also proving that the family is trustworthy, and maybe that's all part so that they can stop running. But, you know, like, it's all part of it. And so, yeah, I really liked that, too. It kind of fits in with the Hanul stuff, with the Dragon Council. Like, it's kind of that same complexity that just makes the story really rich.
Yeah. The last character is Assistant Minister of Defense Yang Miho, who is a very interesting character and a new addition to this series. She is another fox spirit who uses her charm freely. She just charms it up whenever she wants to. Just constantly.
Everyone, anybody, wherever, where, yeah. You know, whenever, wherever, I'm just Shakiri-ing it up to. I was kind of shocked. Like, we thought Mean was a little freewheeling with her use of charm. Mean has nothing on Miho.
Yeah. She's quite an interesting character, and we'll have to talk about her more in the spoiler section, but...
Absolutely.
Initially, she thinks Mean is a magician, because Mean doesn't want to admit that she is a fellow fox spirit, because she doesn't really know what Miho is up to, because Miho is super suspicious.
Yeah.
Like, from the second you see her on the page, very suspicious.
Yeah, like... You just can't, there's no, you can't see a fox spirit who uses charm that wildly and think, good guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like, what are you up to? Like, there's definitely something underhanded going on here.
Yeah.
So it's kind of obvious that Miho is going to complicate Mean's life very quickly.
Yeah. And it's very interesting watching Mean kind of deal with that, because we know that fox spirits aren't innately bad, that the prejudice against them is unwarranted in a lot of cases, or they've acted the way they have because of the way they've been treated. It's reactionary. Whereas Miho is sort of on that spectrum of she's the typical fox spirit who manipulates people constantly, and Mean has to kind of go, okay, this is kind of a part of my family. Like, she is related to me in the way that we're both fox spirits, but I disagree with what she's doing. And to have Mean kind of balance that and not want to throw her under the bus, but not liking what she's doing, was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into our spoiler section now, because there are some really big events that happen in this book that I think are worth discussing in detail.
Definitely.
So, here's the start of our spoiler section, for sure.
Run away now!
Yeah. Okay, so the main purpose of this book is that Mean, Sabine, and Hanul come together for this diplomatic meeting on the station Sangyong. And we meet the Sun Clan's ambassador, Tanaka, during this moment. And it took me a second, but I realized, okay, between them being called the Sun Clan's and talking about gyoza, the food, that I loved that description of Mean, like, not knowing what all the food was and not knowing how to eat it, and then, you know, but thinking it was all delicious and stuff, I figured out that the Sun Clans represent Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we know that the Thousand Worlds kind of represents Korea.
Yeah.
And this just was really interesting to me that they're talking about, because in the books, I believe it's Mean, it might have been Sabine, who was like, how we speak now is like a futuristic version of Korean. Like, Korean was their base language, and while they don't talk like ancient Korean anymore, it comes out of that. And even though we're reading this book in English, Yoon will talk about how they're addressing each other, either formally or informally, things that in English we don't have as much as in other languages, and specifically like Korean and Japanese and all that, you know, a lot of Asian languages, there are very subtle differences in all of that. And so I loved those details, and I love the reminder that, like, they're not speaking English, and that this is two cultures coming together that are very different and have been fighting for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. There are quite a few instances in the book, as I think it's especially with Mean, but it happens to all the characters at one point or another, where the how to address someone of higher rank or someone of equal rank, like, Mean constantly battles with it. Like, she just wants everybody to just be equal so she can just talk. and I kind of love that, because it's very Mean to do that. But, like, even Sabine at times is trying to address a captain, but because of the situation, they actually know more than the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard to, like, necessarily be differential when at the same time you want to, like, just, like, here's what, here's the problem. And, like, Sabine is just working really hard to be respectful, but also be like, this is what's going on, and you need to do this, and I know I you outrank me by a million, but, like, I'm telling you, this is what needs to happen. And, like, I just, again, it's just really fun to see how the different, like, levels of respect and the different titles and how it all interplays in both especially in the Thousand Worlds clan, but also a little bit in the Sun clan too.
Yeah, and I kind of going off of what you said, especially with Hanul, because they're friends, they're peers, they're equals in a lot of way, but she's also now an apprentice to the Dragon Council, and there is some tension between them, and Meen doesn't really know where she stands all the time. And same thing with Sabine, and it's just kind of interesting to kind of, I think that Yun does a really good job of, even though this is all in English, kind of making us aware that there are intricacies to the language and the culture that we don't, that a lot of us US-based people might not be as familiar with if we're not familiar with that cultural background.
Like the angles of bows. Yes. They talk a lot in this book about the correct angle based on the ranking and how you rank in the government or whatever. And I really, like, thought that was fascinating because, you know, as a Westerner, we just look at these, you know, Asian Korean movies and we see people bowing all the time. I don't think I've ever paid attention to the actual, like, angle of the bow and how it may or may not be a deeper one for someone of higher rank. And then I think of something like, and this is probably not, like, accurate, but I think of something like Mulan, where when they see the emperor, they all, like, fall on the ground.
Yeah.
And it makes some logical sense now that I'm kind of thinking about it, because he would have the greatest rank of anyone, and so it would be the very deepest bow possible. So, like, yeah, I really liked looking, like, kind of seeing that throughout the story and how different people in different rankings deserve more and more respect, and therefore a different angle of bow. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and it's a very subtle part of the book, but if you're not familiar with it, it stands out in a good way and makes you interested in wanting to learn more about that. So, again, I think that there's a lot of complexity in this story that's presented very simply, and that is a difficult thing to do without overcomplicating it.
And I think Meen even plays it for a joke here and there, so it takes, like, the tension off of it, but you're still learning, because it just makes it that much more of an approachable thing to want to learn more about.
Yeah. Basically, these peace talks kind of center around this planet that is not too far away from where this space station is. The planet is called Jasujung, and on the planet there is a ship called the Sejong Daewang, which harbors old technology that could sway the war in either direction depending on who gets their hands on it. So we kind of realized fairly early on that this is going to be a central part of the issue. And that becomes a very real problem when there's an explosion on the space station. It's attacked, and the three cadets have to take an escape pod to Jasujung. And it's all very intense because they're enjoying this feast and everything seems fine. There's peace talks. I thought that the Ambassador Tanaka, was really interesting. You could see that there's a cultural difference in the way that she talks to them. And she's kind of, you know, hard-hitting and, like, straight to the point, like, a lot more direct, and means, like, I kind of like this, actually. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty great. And so you think everything's going fine until there's this explosion and they have to escape. And it's really sad because Silhouette takes the three of them and June into the escape pod and shoves them in, closes the door, and sends them away. And Silhouette actually ends up dying in that explosion.
Yeah, I did... like that we were kind of left with a little bit of hope. Like, Meen, of course, believes that there's plenty of time. Silhouette had plenty of time to get on another ship, and, like, hopefully she's in a different escape pod and it's all gonna be fine. And then by the end of the story, we find out that Silhouette absolutely did die in the explosion, and it's really sad, but Silhouette did her job.
Yeah.
And that's the long and short of it, is Silhouette was there to make sure that the Dragon Pearl and Meen stay healthy, stay alive, escape, do not fall into the wrong hands. And, you know, this was the best Silhouette could do in that moment, was make sure that Meen had the means of escape and also the best shot at surviving. And that meant one less body in the escape pod using up the available oxygen and life support. So it was very, it made a lot of sense on Silhouette's part, but yeah. It was also sad.
It was really sad because most of the time, we didn't get to spend a lot of time with Silhouette. Most of the time, he was just ditching her, but she took her job very seriously, and it was a really, you know, she sacrificed herself for Mean, and that definitely means something. And even at the end of the book, Mean is like, why isn't she a ghost? Why isn't she still hanging around? And it's because she made her choice, and she sacrificed herself for what she believed to be the greater cause. So it was really bittersweet, I think, in the end.
I am sad that we didn't actually learn Silhouette's real name.
I know.
Which Mean kind of makes a point to point out at the beginning of the book that, like, I really need to find out what her name is. Like, that's important to Mean, and we still don't know by the end of the book, and that made me a little sad.
Yeah. But they do get into the escape pod and go down to the planet. It's an alien planet, and it's just really interesting to see these kids, like, again, they're 15-ish years old, lean into their training. They know how to patch each other up. They have the med kit. They're on this alien planet where there are creatures they're unfamiliar with. There's flora that they're unfamiliar with. And I even really liked the whole bit where she just kept growing tangerines. That's like the only thing they ate for like 2 weeks.
And it's all because Hanua was like, I really like tangerines.
Yeah.
And the Dragon Pearl was like, I can make tangerines.
Yeah. I can make the best tangerines you've ever had in your life.
They're going to be perfectly ripe, which is not easy.
Yeah. And it's so funny that even after literally 2 weeks of eating them, they're still like, I don't know, they're still so good. Like,
they're just amazing.
I don't mind eating tangerines for the rest of my life.
I think even by the end, they start calling them magic tangerines.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, they're magic. They're perfect. They're wonderful. I don't know how it happens. They're magic. And I love that.
It was pretty funny, but I did like that a lot. So they basically decide at this point that they have to make their way to the Sejong Daewang, and that's the ship on this planet, and they run into Miho on the way. So at this point in the story, especially when you meet her on the planet, did you think she was up to no good?
I didn't trust her.
Yeah.
I don't know if I thought she was, like, the problem, or if she was just someone being used by someone else that was causing problems. I definitely didn't trust Miho, though, because, first of all, when you're first meeting on this planet, you come up with a horde of these, like wolf?
They were, like, creatures?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Wolf bird creatures or something?
Yeah.
They were, like, a weird mix of two things.
But, like, these are the things that have been howling, that have been scaring our trio, and, like, yeah, and Miho just shows up with a horde of them behind her, and is just like, hey, and that just rubs you wrong. Like,
yeah.
When that's your first introduction to someone who you already know uses charm like it's, you know, water, I definitely didn't trust her and didn't know what her game was. I kind of wondered if maybe there was some really complicated stuff going on here, and that Miho was going to end up not necessarily being a problem and being more of just an obstacle, but not really the main evil or the main problem here.
I didn't think that she necessarily was the one that attacked the space station.
Agreed.
I thought there was maybe something else going on there, but other than that, I knew that she was definitely, like, up to something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I feel like we didn't really get too much of an explanation of those creatures, either, and her, like, power over them or anything like that. But you're right. I mean, again, very suspicious.
Yeah. I assume she just charmed them. Like, I don't know everything about charm, but it just was natural that she was able to use her charm and convince them not to attack her, and then just kind of was using them as, I think, like, bodyguards. And then when she met up with the trio, it was like, okay, I don't really need them anymore because these are the people I was looking for anyway.
Yeah. We also find out that she purposely makes Hanul sick so that she basically has, like, one less spirit to deal with. And this made me really angry. Like, I know that we should be really mad about her blowing up the space station, and I am, but, like, making Hanul sick for, like, 2 weeks straight was really awful.
Agreed. I should be more bothered that she killed lots and lots of people by blowing up a space station. And again, I am. That's not cool. But I think maybe it was because we didn't know that for sure. We were still kind of thinking someone else might have been responsible for that. This Hanul stuff really hits harder.
It's a lot more personal.
And it's targeted. Like, yeah. Hanul is a very powerful dragon spirit, and because of that, she had to be weakened in order for Miho to be able to manipulate her and use her to her means. Mm-hmm. So, like, it burns a little worse than any of the other things going on here.
Yeah.
And yeah, as soon as that kind of came to light, mm-hmm. I was like, oh no.
And I was suspicious because I remember Mean being like, it's weird that she only wakes up to eat and then she goes back to being like semi-conscious. And I'm like, something's going on here. Like, this isn't right.
Yeah, for sure.
So the ship, when they do finally arrive at it, after about 2 weeks of, you know, walking around on this planet, it is surrounded by the ghosts of the crew that died in it when it crashed there. And they won't let anyone onto the ship, except for they will possibly negotiate with another ghost. So we kind of figure by the end of this that Miho did kind of engineer all of this and that she needed a spirit with her. So, like, June becomes a very important part of this story at this point.
Yeah, he does. And I think one of my favorite moments in this book is the wink.
Oh, the wink was so good.
Because my little heart was broken for me.
Broken.
Broken. Completely. It's three syllables, but broken. Because poor Mean is all alone, and, you know, we'll get to the details of this in a minute, but, like, Miho has, like, turned everyone against her, and even June is standing on Miho's side, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, how is that possible? June is a ghost, and, like, I bought it. I ate it up with a spoon. I 100% believed that somehow Miho was able to use charm on June. And then a few chapter later, I don't know, we get June addressing Mean and we get this wink. And I'm just like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it. Like, the Hanul thing was bad enough. And, like, seeing Sabine be charmed and have to deal with that, I was like, it just feels insurmountable for Mean to be completely on her own with only the Dragon Pearl as an assist. Like,
yeah.
it just burned. So I was so happy to see that June was actually just playing along and was really just trying to help Mean, but thought this might be the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. And I 100% think that was true.
Yeah, I think it obviously worked out great in the end, but it was a little touch and go there in the middle, and I did feel really bad for Mean. But we do learn more about Miho's backstory here. She has a sister, Jiho, who was on board the ship. And this was, like, hundreds of years ago, because Miho's very old. She has 9 tails. She's very powerful. I think Mean discovers that she has 2 tails by the end of this book, which is very exciting. And so she's still very young, but even just having 2 tails is like, whoa. So a 9-tailed fox spirit is like a very big deal.
And I love the reveal of this because Mean and all of them kind of look at Miho like, so you're old.
Yeah.
Like, they don't say it like that, but it's basically like, so you're like really old. Like, because my guess is Miho doesn't look old. Miho probably appears to be 18, 19, 20s. I don't know.
Thinking like 20s, maybe 30s.
Yeah, like somewhere in there. Yeah. Miho doesn't give off like super mature, older, powerful being kind of thing. She gives off equal in most cases to Mean, at least for my brain throughout the book.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kind of learning this and the reaction of all 3 of them kind of going like, oh, you're real old. Like, okay. And I mean, it definitely makes Miho more powerful and more of an adversary, but it just was kind of a surprise to me and obviously a surprise to them too.
Yeah. And we learned that her sister was part of the crew, like I was saying, and she died doing, you know, what they were supposed to be doing. And so Miho wants to get revenge, and she basically doesn't want the peace talks to come to any sort of conclusion. She wants this war to keep going on, and she wants the Sun Clans to be defeated. And so all of this has been to get to the ship in order to get the technology and stuff that was on board and end the war once and for all. But joke's on her, because the ghosts of the crew, they don't want to be used in the war anymore. And so they never let anybody inside the ship. But then they kind of realize through talking to June especially, but also to Mean, that the war hasn't ended. It's still going on. And so they want to help avoid future conflict, and they realize that they have to sort of like change their ways. What I found really interesting about the ghosts is that they end up sacrificing themselves to power the ship. They actually like go into the ship and bring it to life. And that to me, like, it's like a ghost ship, which is so interesting. And just the whole idea behind how the ship works and that there has to be a sacrifice and a promise. I thought all of that was really cool.
I really liked the Admiral character, the ghost Admiral, I guess you would say. He was really fascinating. And I just really liked that, like, Sabine was kind of got along with the Admiral, like, kind of right off the bat, because they didn't really have a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And as they're finally getting the ship to, like, work and leave the planet, the Admiral's kind of there and talking to Sabine and, like, helping. And then as soon as things work out and the ship is running and things, the Admiral just kind of disappears, and
yeah.
Sabine is like,
I'm on my own now.
Like, I really liked that. Like, I liked that guy. Why does he have to be gone? But, like, it was, you know, the final bit of the sacrifice was the Admiral joining his crew and becoming part of the ship, and
mm-hmm.
it was just a really beautiful little way to tie the ghost story up, and I liked that
yeah.
the Admiral had a bond with Sabine, even if it was a short-lived one.
Yeah, and the promise is that the trio, plus June, have promised to use the ship for honorable causes, and that's the only way that the ghost would allow them to take the ship off-planet. And so we kind of get this really interesting wrap-up part of the story where they have the ship now. Miho is in custody, essentially in their custody, and Hanul kind of decides she doesn't want to be a part of the council. She never really did, but it was just sort of like the thing that she thought she was supposed to do. Mean and June get to see the Thousand Worlds and beyond because they have their own ship now, and Sabine gets to prove that they're trustworthy and honorable, and they get to continue being the cadet that they want to be. And so you said this at the top of this section, but like the way this book ended, I feel like it wraps it up so nicely and yet opens the door for so much more beyond that.
Yeah, like we have this beautiful ending that all three of these characters are going to be together and they're going to be out and they have this ship. And I can kind of see that there's a path forward if Yoon Ha Lee wants to write more books. We could continue to get the stories of these three adventuring in space and, you know, and all that. But at the same time, it's also just the fulfillment of each of them. Like, Hanul didn't want to join the Dragon Council, but it's what you do as a dragon spirit who's got talent with, you know, the elements especially. And since Hanul is very water talented, it, you know, it just kind of works that that's what she's supposed to be doing. And I love that this gives Hanul the opportunity to go and adventure and be a part of something that isn't just what's expected of her. And then you've got Mean, who also, you know, has this very simple but incredibly difficult dream of seeing all of the Thousand Worlds with June. Like, that's all they want. And I love that the two of them get to do that together as a part of the crew of the ship. And then, of course, Sabine really gets to crew their own ship at this point, which I think is really, really cool.
Yeah.
That Sabine gets to be the captain and basically be in charge of this ship. And I love that that is kind of a dream fulfilled and comes out of nowhere. Like, they have no real, like, it's not like a driving ambition, like, I must be captain of a ship, but it's just like a lingering dream.
Yeah.
And
nothing that they thought they could do this
right.
early into their career.
And it comes to fruition so beautifully in the
yeah.
end. And I just love that it works so well for all three characters.
It really feels like all of them get to fly off into the sunset. And it reminds me so much of Star Trek in that it's like, okay, you know, especially that first Star Trek movie with Chris Pine where they finally have their crew together and they're like, okay, now we get to go off and do what we've wanted to do this entire time. And so I feel like, yeah, again, I think there's so much more story to be told here, and I'll be really interested if Yoon Ha Lee decides to write anything else set within the Thousand Worlds series, because I want to know more about how the Pearl works. We got, like, some really great instances of Mean using it in this book, but I would love to see more. I want to know more about her family back home and her home planet. Like, will she go back and terraform it at some point? She kind of left her entire family behind to do all of this, and we never get anything more about them. And I want to know more about Sabine's family and what happened to them and what they're doing now. I want to know more about Hanul's relationship with the Dragon Council and how they'll maybe work with Mean, and maybe Hanul can be this, like, go-between between the two to make sure that they're not fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like, travels in the ship. I feel like this is just the beginning for them, and I would definitely read about more adventures with this crew.
Yeah, I could definitely see a future in which they're adventuring and they're seeing all of the worlds, and as they visit these worlds, Mean is helping by terraforming planets that the Dragon Council has not gotten to, that have been left to flounder, and is doing, you know, the work that you can feel Mean wants to be doing, wants to be helping those less fortunate, the people who are growing up like she did. And so I feel like that's a really strong drive for her. And Hanul, I feel like, would be right on board with that, because it's not in opposition to the Dragon Council. They can still continue terraforming all the planets that they see fit, but at the same time, Mean can be working with the planets that don't have access to the Dragon Council, like, aren't getting the attention from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like, yeah, there's so many adventures that these three can have together, and I would love to read more of them, but I also understand if this is kind of where it ends, and, you know, if this series gets, you know, found by more people, and we got, like, fan fiction? There's such a rich world for fan fiction at the end of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I don't know if there's a ton of fanfic for this series out there, but there's definitely, like, unlimited potential for it.
Yeah. And that kind of reminds me, too, that we didn't really mention where the whole Sun Clan situation ended up by the end, and it was essentially, which was very good, that Ambassador Tanaka recognized that Miho was kind of this lone saboteur, that it wasn't the entire Thousand Worlds trying to kill her and trying to keep the war going. So, like, the peace talks will resume, which I think is really interesting, but again, I think there's so much more potential there for a story beyond just that, and that would be very interesting to me.
Definitely. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show Wolfpack is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And if you have spoilers for Chalice of the Gods, make sure to mark those so that Kristen does not read them, although Karen reads most of the emails, so don't panic too much. You can find our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is really helpful. You can leave questions, comments, ideas for content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have some feedback this week. We have an email from Anthony, and I'm going to throw it to Karen for that.
Yes, this email made me so happy. The subject line was "thank you" in all caps, and Anthony writes, "Hello, I just wanted to thank both of you so much. I got into the Percy fandom a little late. I knew about the series, but my child ADHD brain never got into it. At that time, I was reading Harry Potter and Aragorn. I remember watching the movie when it came out, but I did not remember much of it. Now, years later, I decided to pick up The Lightning Thief as I was looking for something to read. I have to say, I was hooked. I ended up reading through the whole series in a matter of days. After finishing the series, needless to say, I wanted more. I did a little bit of research and found Heroes of Olympus, House of Hades, best one, cough, cough. Anyway, after that series, I thought it was done. I had to find a podcast for Percy Jackson fans, and here we are. The reason why I wanted to thank you is because you have given me knowledge of all the other books Rick has written and the many books from RRP. Because of you, I begged my sister to get me a hardcover of Daughter of the Deep. Well, since then, I have expanded my library, and this just came in for me in the mail, and I wanted to share the love and joy of seeing my packages all arrive at the same time. And they provided a picture of a slew of Percy Jackson-related books, but also To Sleep in a Sea of Stars and Fractal Noise by Christopher Paolini, which is really cool. I hope you have a wonderful day, happy Halloween, and much love from a son of Pluto. That's very cool. Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, and there's nothing better than book mail. Like, I'm sorry.
Really,
there's nothing
not.
Better than getting a new book in the mail.
Yeah.
It's, whether you order it or it's like a PR book or whatever,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's really exciting getting books in the mail.
My friends were making so much fun of me because when we went to the Chicago stop, like I already had a physical book and the digital book of Chalice of the Gods. Then I got the new one, and I knew my Barnes & Noble one was on the way, and I knew the UK version one was on the way. And we went to Barnes & Noble, and I was eyeing the pile of Chalice of the Gods books there, and they're like, do you need another one? I was like, no, but I just want to take one home because, like, they're just sitting here. Even though I already have this exact copy at home, I did not buy one. But, like, even when you already have a copy of that book, just getting another book in the mail, it's just so nice.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes you just want to go to a bookstore and be amongst the books.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're there to buy them, because yeah. I've been to Barnes & Noble at least twice in the last, like, 2 weeks, and I've been there just to, like, walk around and look at the books. It's a sickness.
It's
like
fun.
A whole thing. But it's a good one. It's fun. And it's, yeah. I'm so happy for you. And we definitely all understand that whole, like, you get into a series and pretty much you've read the whole thing in 3 days, 5 days, and you're like,
now
wow.
What?
So I'm really, really glad you found the books and are enjoying them so much.
Yeah, and the podcast.
Yeah, and RRP and all the crazy.
Yeah.
There's so many. So that's just really exciting. Okay, next week we will be talking about Chalice of the Gods chapters 9 through 11 and hopefully a SAG-AFTRA deal. We're all just
yeah.
going to cross our fingers because
yep.
as soon as that happens, there's going to be TV show talk and I really can't wait. So
yeah.
we're just going to keep our fingers crossed there. But until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.